Good evening. Sorry. I will now call the Thursday, November 7th, 2024 meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Commissioner Williams, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Brodsky.
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Here.
Commissioner Placer.
Here.
Commissioner Stanton.
Present.
Commissioner Godway Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Williams, here. Commissioner Lowe.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Commissioner Walters.
Here.
All are present.
Excellent. We have a quorum. Are there any changes or adjustments to the minutes, or not to the minutes, to the agenda, Mr. Zinner?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Motion to approve by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Is there a thumbs up approval on the agenda? Unanimous? Unanimous. We all received a copy of the October 24th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Are there any changes or adjustments to the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes, Madam Chair.
Second.
Motion to approve by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Is there a thumbs up approval of the minutes? Unanimous with Commissioner Lowe abstaining. Oh, and also Commissioner Williams abstaining. Very good. Our first item on the agenda for tonight is a tabling request in case number 262-2024, a request by Crockett Engineering Agent on behalf of First State Community Bank owners to rezone 12.92 acres from RMF multifamily to PD plan development, seeking approval of a statement of intent and development plan for Legacy Woods, which includes 49 single-family lots and three common lots on the parcel located at 5201 Ewing Lane. The applicants are also seeking design adjustments from Section 29-5.1C in regards to maximum block length and maximum number of lots served by one street segment, and Section 29-5.1D in regards to required sidewalk construction. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may, ma'am. So this request is sought to table for one meeting, which is typically not normal when we deal with projects of this scope. However, the only reason for the tabling request is that the design adjustments that were just acknowledged as being required for this project site were not identified during the initial advertising for this item. And in order to ensure that we have 15 days worth of public notice prior to consideration, the request table was needed. We will have met the required public notification by the November 21st meeting, and ostensibly the entire case was completed in its evaluation with the exception of the design adjustments that were needed. Initially, staff believed that they could have been handled as exceptions to the PD standards, when in fact the cited sections are actually subdivision-related elements which require a specific design adjustment. Zoning-related elements are those that can be handled through an exception authorized by the Planning Commission and are normally incorporated within the development plan, whereas subdivision-required design adjustments have to be publicly advertised since they require a public hearing. Staff supports the tabling request as it was necessary in order to meet public notification requirements and will be prepared on the November 21st agenda with a full staff report dealing not only with the planned development plan request and rezoning, as well as a discussion of the sought design adjustment requests as well.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had any outside contact with parties to this case, please disclose so now. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff about the tabling motion? Seeing none. This is just a tabling motion. This is not on the merits of the case, but if there are any members of the public who wish to speak about the tabling of this case, please come forward. Seeing none, we will close public comment. Are there any commissioner comments on the tabling motion? Commissioner Stanton?
If there's no other questions from my colleagues, I would like to entertain a motion, Madam Chair. as it relates to 5201 Urban Lane Legacy Farms rezoning, case 262-2024. I move to table this case to November 21st meeting.
Second.
We have a motion to table the case by Commissioner Stanton and a second by Commissioner Lowe. Is there any discussion on the motion to table? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galloway-Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams, yes. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
9 votes, the motion carries.
Unanimous. Thank you. That case will be tabled to our next meeting, November 21st, 2024. Next case up. Case number 260-2024, a request by a civil group agent on behalf of Dan and Audrey Baracco, owners seeking to rezone 4.82 acres from R1 one-family dwelling district to the RMF multifamily dwelling district. The subject property is located or is addressed as 4414 Smith Drive and is directly south of the intersection of Dayspring Drive and Smith Drive. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may. This case is probably familiar to a majority of the commissioners here tonight. It's new for a couple. But yes, this is a request by a civil group on behalf of Dan and Audrey Baracco to rezone 4.82 acres of land from the R1 single-family dwelling to the RMF multifamily dwelling zoning district. Again, this is just directly south of the intersection of Dayspring Drive and Smith Drive. Notice was made in the form of both or in public information postcards, which were sent out prior to the 22nd of October, and property owner letters and advertisements in the Columbia Tribune were both, published on the 22nd for in the Tribune and distributed on the 22nd for the property owner letters. So we'll do some aerial imagery quickly just to show how the site is situated here. Google imagery, again, is outdated here, so the Westbury development does not have any imagery, so it isn't really the greatest illustration of what the site looks like. This is what it looks like today. You can see Westbury is mostly developed with the exception of Lot 10, that is developed in the southeast corner, but not in its entirety. And then the southwest corner of Westbury is also not developed. But yes, this is how the site looks today. Here is how the zoning is situated around the site. The site itself, again, is R1. Pretty much everything south of Smith Drive, as you can see here, is also R1, with the exception of the lots which abut Scott Boulevard. Westbury, as I've been mentioning, is MC zoned, and this was zoned in 2019 out of PD into MC for the commercial uses that exist there today. And the multifamily lots, which kind of border all of that MC development, were also zoned that way in 2019. This is a little bit more of a zoomed out look, just for the sake of context, particularly how land is zoned, west of Scott Boulevard, south of Smith Drive, this area of the city. So a little bit more background on the site. It was annexed partially both in 91 and 1994. The legal description of the lot by the city surveyor has been determined to be accurate. And since it is residentially zoned, or accurate in terms of meets and bounds, and since it was residentially zoned and the description was prior to annexation, it would retain legal lot status, so it would be able to be developed without platting, even with the change of use or zoning in this case, because it's still moving to a residential zoning district. Some acreage of this site was initially lost due to a street easement dedication provided for the construction of Smith Drive near the intersection of Scott Boulevard. Surrounding zoning districts, again, are labeled here, R1 to the south and west. There's no street boundary for this site from anything to the south or to the west. Smith Drive is a street that serves as a boundary before you run into the MC and the RMF lots that are, again, part of Westbury. And there are MC and MN lots to the east, and there's no street boundary between those and the site, but it is buffered by a Type 2 stream buffer for the Gooden branch. Excuse me. So considering this area has seen notable change, as I mentioned, since 2019, it's important to consider how these changes may affect the compatibility of land uses. During the rezoning request, staff noted this area should be considered as a quote-unquote marketplace node, which is something that is identified within the comprehensive plan Columbia Imagine, as an area of commerce that has residential density around it, more or less. Marketplaces are intended to have around 75,000 leasable square footage of commercial for commercial purposes, and this can go up to 100,000 per the description in the UDC, or sorry, comprehensive plan. Westbury is presently near that. Adding more residential density would be prudent around this developed commercial area. The main MC node in Westbury is bound by streets in all directions: Faroe to the north, Dayspring to the west, Smith to the south, Scott to the west. The RMF developments north of the Westbury MC lots, again, are bound by Faroe, but there is no street border or anything like that in the rear of that RMF lot. It is just abutting R2 and R1 residential lots, which is very similar as to what this, if this lot were to be developed for multifamily purposes, it would be similar in nature as to the north end multifamily development for Westbury. This area has been identified as a neighborhood district in the Columbia. This lot particularly has been identified within the neighborhood district in Columbia Imagine Future Land Use Map. Westbury has identified as the neighborhood marketplace again, and this encourages residential around said marketplace node, which is supposed to be a primary tenant, which in this case is Mosier's the grocer. Site again nearing the maximum commercial leasable space, so increased residential density around the node should be encouraged. Also, I'll get to this in a couple slides, but there is pedestrian infrastructure that exists around the site that makes it so it may be walkable. It is within 800 meters, excuse me, of the grocery store. This is the distance people often say is the most someone would be willing to walk for something. It's fewer than 800 meters away from the grocery store. A little bit more about the marketplace concept, just to make sure I'm articulating it correctly for everyone. The node is the primary tenant, like Mosier's, like I said, in this case. It provides commercial services along arterial streets and surrounding neighborhoods. They're intended to promote density around the node, and they are intended to identify areas where walkability could be encouraged due to proximity to amenities and residential density. The image on the left here, this is from the comprehensive plan, excuse me. This is for an example at Clink Scales and West Ash intersection, and so everything that would be encapsulated within the marketplace node that they've identified there. Here's how it would look like for this particular site. So everything around this, in this blue buffer, would be within an 800 meter radius, again, of Mosier's. It would be kind of disingenuous to say all of these are within 800 meters walking distance, because curvilinear roads, you can't walk straight through people's properties and whatnot. But that is a buffer of 800 meters around there, and those would be, certainly the site that we're discussing today would be within that radius. Just a little bit more about walkability. This is the kind of how it would look if you're driving westbound on Smith Drive. You can see that there is a striped crosswalk with a pedestrian island there. There are sidewalks on the west side of Dayspring Drive as well, and there's a cut curb at the intersection of Faroe and Dayspring, which would allow one to go to the Mosier's. And if we want to take a look, also heading eastbound, which maybe, I guess, shows the Westbury development perhaps a little bit better than that last slide did, you can see that there's a relatively direct path from what would be the subject site here onto the sidewalk, across, on a pedestrian island if needed, all the way to Mosier's. So per Columbia Imagined, this site also lies within a prioritized infill area, and like I said before, is not within the marketplace itself, but within its service area. RMF zoning south of Smith Drive would be considered consistent in terms of the land use pattern with the RMF zoned property that is directly north of the MC marketplace, which is Westbury Flats. It may be inconsistent with development to the south, but this site, if developed, would be unlikely to induce traffic within these residential roads. They'd be going directly onto Smith Drive. They would probably have very little interaction with the single family residential subdivisions to the south, at least in terms of transportation. It would seem like this site could be something very similar to the northern bookend of Westbury, which is Westbury Flats here. If this site were developed, something that's comparable, it does seem like that would make sense. This site is about a little bit less than 1 acre larger than the Westbury Flats site, I believe. And these developments would both be subject to the same screening and buffering requirements because they both abut what is used for residential purposes, residentially zoned land. So overall, RMF's found to be appropriate zoning designation for this site because it incurs residential density near an identified marketplace node and because residential multifamily zoning on this site would mirror the RMF development which exists north and west of Westbury presently, the Westbury commercial node, that is. Site would also be more walkable than many sites are due to the existing PED infrastructure that exists around there and its proximity to aforementioned marketplace node. Development on the site is likely to require a transportation impact study, which would identify necessary on and off-site transportation improvements, which would be necessary to ensure there's not a drop in level of service on the road if it were to be developed with increased intensity. And residential multifamily would be slightly more intense, but serves, would be more intense than what is R1 right now, but could serve as a transitional buffer from what is currently commercial developments on the west side of Scott Boulevard and the rest of the single-family residential subdivisions south of Smith Drive. Ultimately, city staff supports this request to rezone the site from R1 single-family residential to RMF residential multifamily on the site due to its consistency with a comprehensive plan future land use designation within that and the contextual zoning and land use patterns around this site, particularly around Westbury. Therefore, staff recommends Planning and Zoning Commission approve this request to rezone the site addressed at 4414 Smith Drive from R1 to RMF. And I'd be happy to answer any questions y'all may have.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff. Commissioner Placer.
I noticed the letter that we have from one of the residents of the R1 to the south seems to be perturbed by the fact that this would be viewable from their house. Is there any requirement for any kind of buffering between this and that R1?
Yes, there is a level one buffer, if I'm remembering correctly, because this would be a residential use buffering next to RMF zoning. So that would be a level one buffer, which is a 6-foot screening device.
Okay. Commissioner Lowe.
And because it's a zoned multifamily use, it would also be subject to the neighborhood protection standards because it's going in next to a single or two family use. So that requires, it increases the side and your rear yard setbacks by 10 feet and requires stepping down the building portion within 25 feet of the side or rear lot lines to a maximum of 24 feet. So the building has to step down and they have to pull it in more.
Any other questions for staff? Commissioner Williams.
Since it's not plotted, you had mentioned it may not need to come back through for approval. There's a variety of uses that are permitted for RMF. Are there any, like, what are the circumstances that would require it to come back through the commission before its development was approved? So for instance, you showed one single building of apartment complexes. If there were multiple buildings of apartment complexes placed on the site, would that require it to come through?
If they wanted to put these structures on independent lots, then yes, they would have to preliminary plat, if I'm not incorrect. In which case it would be seen by the Planning and Zoning Commission. However, you would be able to build multiple structures all on one lot if it's under, I guess, if they elect to stay under one owner.
Thank you.
Commissioner Lowe?
Commissioner Pelosi, just to clarify, for building height and neighborhood protection standards, it's one of the two. So they either have to pull it back if it's over 30 feet or step it down.
Any further questions for staff? Seeing none, we will go to public comment. Please come forward, state your name and address for the record. 6 minutes for a group and 3 minutes for an individual.
Good evening. My name is Jay Gephardt. I'm a civil engineer with a civil group. I'm here tonight representing Dan and Audrey. I really don't have anything to add to the staff's report. I'm here to answer questions, so I don't think I'll take my 6 minutes. But
thank you.
I just want.
Any questions for the engineer? Commissioner Williams.
Since the last time that you were here with this proposal, I know it's changed since then, but have you had any further conversations such that you could provide the commission with information on what you expect would be built here if it was rezoned?
No, and the situation hasn't changed other than that we were turned down at council for the MOF, but the Baracos still will own the property. They will not develop the property. They will sell it to someone who will. So I think it'd be disingenuous of me to say that this is, I don't know what it will be. So I think you have to make your decision based on what's allowed in the RMF district.
Thank you. I appreciate your candor in that.
Any further questions for the speaker? Commissioner Stanton.
I was looking for something to start a fight, and I can't find one, Mr. J.
Hey.
Anyone else? Seeing none. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you.
Anyone else to speak on this case tonight? Okay. In that case, we will close public comment and go to commissioner comment. Any commissioner comments? Commissioner Stanton.
Well, we've seen this case before. It was a pretty lengthy battle the last time it was in front of us. It looks like this family has taken better counsel this time. I plan to support this. You know, he's doing what is in his purview as a landowner, and, you know, I think this is a better fit than what he was asking for before. Think he got better counsel or did some homework or something, and I plan to support his efforts.
Commissioner Ortiz?
Yeah, so this was one of the I guess cases that I was looking at when I applied for PNZ, and it was very exciting to read so much comment, but I'm excited that this has come back quickly, and I also plan to support the RMF, so.
Any further commissioner comment? Commissioner Williams?
I do not share the enthusiasm of my fellow commissioners. I'm going to read into the record what I read last time, including with its less than full sentences at times. So under Missouri law, the burden is on individuals seeking rezoning to show that the current zoning is unreasonable. And I won't go through every factor in that, but one of which is the property value of, you know, the value of the property. And I can understand your comments regarding the property value being less for R1, particularly given that it sits on a road that has become increasingly busy and looks out towards what is now a commercial space. So the balance there is that we have to look at. So there's a detriment to you if we don't approve it. We have to balance that out against the public. The counterside to that is the public doesn't include just the neighbors there. So if the abutting property owners are against it, that's not a de facto reason because the abutting property owners don't speak, are not representative of the public as a whole. So that's the weighing out that we have to do. I'm saying that just for the record, that these are the factors we have to consider. And when I look at this, I see on the positive side for the request that there is the surrounding zoning districts along Smith and Scott that would be reflective of a commercial use. This is the lighter commercial use than those, so that certainly weighs in favor of it. The property value aspect I mentioned weighs in favor of it. It's a lighter use, so it's a step down that weighs in favor of it, and it's also consistent with the neighborhood district designation for Columbia Imagined. On the flip side, we have seen that there's some distinguishment between what's being requested and what's around it. So the MC and MN that are around it have natural boundaries by the creek, which creates a greater setoff than would be present for this property if it was rezoned. And everything that's on the south side of Smith is R1, except for those properties which have a natural setoff. We have to consider the neighboring property values. I do think, you know, a 25 or maybe it's increased rear yard and, you know, space between the boundary, the rear boundary of the property, and a 35 or 45 foot tall building isn't a great deal of distance when you think about the spacing there. And I've heard numerous individuals from the public who live in the area, but who do not live immediately abutting the property, state that they are concerned about traffic because traffic is already an issue with congestion from the development on the north side of Smith Drive, in particular as it gets closer to Scott Boulevard and the location of the subject property, we very close to that already congested intersection. And so it would add, what currently there is no left-hand turn to any commercial business, it would add a left-hand turn to the south, whereas right now all the traffic is at least heading to the north into that commercial property. So those are the things that I'm looking at and weighing out, and that leads me to believe that this is a fairly debatable position as to whether or not this is a proper request. And so for me, the up or down comes to there's no current plan, and that means that whether this is up or down, or you told me suddenly that you were going to change it and it was going to be RMF, there's still no plan. And given the counterbalancing, I have concerns that that's just not equitable for the residents and property owners around, both the abutting ones concerned about their property value and perhaps more distant neighbors concerned about the street. So my view, weighing out the different factors, my weighing goes to voting no, regardless of how it's zoned, whether it's the city's proposal or the applicant's proposal, because I don't think it's proper, given what we've heard, to rezone this without a development plan presented to us. And so my opinion remains the same, is that if I'm being tasked with balancing out the conflicting interests of the public versus the landowner, I can't adequately evaluate the interests of the public because I don't know what's going in here. And there's a lot of things that can fit into RMF. You could decide to subdivide this and have individual houses. You could decide to make duplexes. You could decide to put a large amount of apartment complexes in there. Now, none of those things are good or bad inherently, but they are different. And they do change the neighborhood and they do affect the neighboring properties and the surrounding area differently. And they also impact what the goals are of Columbia Imagine differently. And so I feel like in a commercial way, it would be feasible for you to have to come to the commission with a plan for how this would be developed with someone who is a developer who's interested in purchasing the property on the condition that it be rezoned. And so particularly with, again, the opposition we heard the first time, my view is that balancing out the factors you have to consider, I can't balance it out without knowing what's going to go there and how it's going to affect the public, good or bad. Thank you.
Commissioner Brodsky.
I apologize. I'm going to ask some questions of staff. I'm still getting my sea legs as a commissioner. The height of this building, it can be a maximum of 35 feet?
Technically 45 if you want to add an extra 10-foot side yard setback to either of your side yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as if we can put conditions on this rezoning if we want to, no? Okay. So for me, I mean, my biggest consideration is the height of you know, how tall this thing can be. Traffic, I think, is going to be fine. The use is fine. For me personally, even as a multifamily in the most, you know, the highest use case, you know, just the most number of units. But if that's done with a very tall building, that would kind of, you know, be imposing on the land use to the south there, in particular with the R1. That's my biggest concern. That's why I ask if we have the ability to put a condition. I would rezone this to RMF if we could say 25 feet and under. But I'm on the fence, so that's where I'm at.
Commissioner Lowe.
We do not require a plan for rezoning. That's not something we have in our evaluation. We are evaluating it based on the use and allowances allowed in the zoning class being asked for. This came through as an MC previously, and we did not support that. I support the RMF. Thank you.
Commissioner Stanton.
I stand by the words of wisdom of Ms. Lowe and the previous request for MC. We chewed the applicant alive for those very reasons that it didn't fit. As staff eloquently put, that this is basically a market node. I don't know what your actual definition you gave, but it fits perfectly in this urban planning world that those gentlemen have spent decades in school learning about market nodes and, you know, marketplace corridors and vision plans and all of that. And that's what this fits. That buffer, that zone of 800, is it? Staff, help me out. Don't make me look crazy on TV.
800 meters is 800 typically meters. Considered the maximum walking threshold okay. for people.
So we're talking walkable communities. We're talking walkable neighborhoods. We're talking, the primary focus point is Mosier's grocery store. So we're addressing food deserts. I mean, it's like a textbook urban planning checklist. Am I right, staff? Staff, you're leaving me out here again.
I think it creates good opportunities.
Yes. So this applicant, like I said before, did his homework. I hate the unknown as well, but both parties check the boxes, and we have to kind of look at that information, and this fits better than MC. And, you know, for those who are in opposition, my famous question is, what if you were them, what would be the solution? You know, and he has rights to his property. We didn't like his first proposal, but he has a right to use his property in the best way that we and him, we can create a win-win to achieve what both sides need to happen. And I think this zoning does it, and it's hard to reject it unless there is a more viable reason to reject it. And your points, Rookie, were great. Ms. Williams, they were great. But that changed with this proposal. And everything that you said, you know, the neighbors had opposition the last time and blah, 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 blah. What's the alternative to make both sides whole would be my next question. And we know R1 isn't it. We know MC isn't it. What would it be to make this whole if you reject this? You know, that would be my counter to any opposition.
Anyone else? If not, I would just add that I think that the owner has demonstrated that R1 is an underutilization of a piece of property this big and said, you know, for future planning purposes, this property should be more developed than just with a single family home. And I think that has been well demonstrated by the applicant through the process with our staff and in the staff report. I also think that multifamily is a good step when you are facing Smith Drive. You know, if this weren't facing a neighborhood collector, then I might say, oh, you know, you could subdivide it and do 6 or 7 houses. But this is facing a neighborhood collector with commercial around it, with RMF around it. And I think this gives us an opportunity to have a lower impact on those properties that back to it with some good buffering. And honestly, it's what I think we asked him to come back with, and I'll be supporting it for sure. Any final comments, or would someone like to make a motion? Commissioner Placer?
My only comment would be about the walkability as a strength of it. This parcel is pretty much cut off from the surroundings because its only entrance and exit is onto Smith. And so, as so often happens with RMF, it's on a busy street and, you know, where are places to walk, not just for shopping, but for walking? I suppose you could cross over to Day Spring. I think Westbury has a much better environment for that, you know, just for on foot kinds of travel. But that was my only concern about it, is it is a sort of cut-off island. And maybe that's the way the surrounding R1s would like it.
Anyone else? Sorry, Commissioner Brodsky, were you?
Oh. Are you going to make a motion?
I was going to make a motion, but if you have another comment.
I do.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Just looking for clarity from staff or maybe legal. And maybe I'm misreading some things in the ordinance, but it reads to me that if we're looking at any application for approval for zoning map change, which is what we're talking about here, that we do have the ability to put conditions. Am I just way off base?
Well, I know. Go ahead, Pat.
The only processes by which you can apply conditions are those that are planned, because that is contractual zoning, and conditional use permits. That is not the case here. This is a straight rezoning request. So there is not the ability to place conditions on straight rezoning. You have the ability and authority to do that when you're doing planned district designations. And with a conditional use, when you're weighing factors that are necessary by which to ensure compatibility of that particular use that's identified as conditional. When we're looking at land use, a straight rezoning request that has principal permitted uses within it, those principal permitted uses are subject to the dimensional standards of the code and any other supplemental conditions that are within the code. So when we drafted these regulations, we gave consideration of all of the, generally, the factors that were believed to be most important, such as screening, landscaping, buffering, light height, parking lot locations, and all of those features. Plan zoning, Mr. Brodsky, unlike when you were here initially, is no longer really a supportable type of action because of the labor-intensive nature of that and the uncertainty of change. And it's no different than what Mr. Williams's concern is about not having a plan for this particular property at this point. But based on the way that this ordinance is structured, there is no plan requirement with a straight rezoning request. We rely on all of the requirements within the code to be properly administered by staff from a technical perspective, should the zoning allow it to occur.
And I totally agree. We do not want to go back to planned world. I'm just reading this language here. Unless otherwise indicated in a specific provision of this chapter, the director, department, board, commission, or council authorized to make decisions under this chapter, this is all in the zoning stuff, may approve the application, deny the application, or approve the application subject to conditions.
What section of the code are you reading from, sir?
I am under 29.6.3, standard regulatory procedures. And the only reason I ask this, and I don't want to derail, you know, this is seemingly a relatively simple request, but I would be able to support this if we were to say additionally 25 feet tall or 30 feet tall. But I think a 45-foot tall multifamily building next to these R1 parcels is too much for me, or not conducive.
While staff is looking at that, I'm just going to weigh in and say I don't want to start going down that path. And so, I mean, you're welcome to make whatever motion, and I'll recognize you if legal says we're allowed to. But I would not be supportive of starting to do that on these individual straight zoning things. I think that takes us back to the path that we were prior to the UDC, where we're constantly, you know, spot zoning everything with conditions and that sort of thing. I would rather rely on the buffering requirements that we have and that sort of thing. But like I said, you're welcome to, but just while they're looking that up, I thought I'd weigh in.
No, and I appreciate that. I'm not going to make a motion if there's no support for it. But.
Well, if you Commissioner Brodsky, if you read that, it says, I see where you're pointing that out, and it says subject to the conditions as in subsection E below. States conditions required to bring the development into compliance with the requirements of this chapter. So I don't know if that
read the second number two there. In addition,
again, I mean,
it's not. Yeah, you know, it's. The condition is not necessary in order to bring the application into compliance with any portion of the code. It is a preference. It is not a requirement. If we needed.
That's bullet point number one. Bullet point number two,
right,
says that in addition, we may attach conditions to any permit or approval under this chapter, provided that the condition is required to bring the proposed development in the application into compliance with the comprehensive plan, or to protect public health, safety, or welfare.
That one, I would tell you that it's not governed. Height is not governed by the comprehensive plan, and the protection of health, the public welfare, health, and safety, those are covered by all of our other requirements that deal with stormwater preservation, stormwater applications, preservation, ensuring we have adequate parking. We're not creating situations in where you're jeopardizing the safety. The structure placed on this property in compliance to the dimensional standards that are authorized, setbacks plus any other requirements as specified by neighborhood protections, were viewed at the time that this ordinance was adopted as being sufficient to ensure the public health, safety, and welfare are met. It would not, because it is not a conditional use, as has been practiced in the 16 years I have worked here, we've never applied conditions to a rezoning request that is outside a planned zoning district in order to facilitate public health, safety, or welfare.
So staff's reading of public health, safety, and welfare is more like, are we creating a safety concern?
Yes. And because the way that the standards are constructed, we would not say that we are. That's part of why we have our other standards. And for the comprehensive plan, it doesn't speak to dimensional aspects of a proposal of this nature. It speaks to how do we coordinate bringing that development allowed within that zoning district into a location, and how does it comport with the overall objectives of the comprehensive plan land use elements.
Appreciate that. Sorry to derail things.
That's fine. And Commissioner, if you'd like me to look into that, I can do that. If I mean, that's not going to be dispositive for your decision tonight, I can look into that if you so.
No need. Choose. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Commissioner Lowe, if you're ready.
Yes. Just one follow-up comment on the height. As planner identified, the 45 is only allowed if they come in another 10 feet, and that's on top of either coming in 10 feet with a neighborhood protection standard to go up, or stepping down to 25 feet if they're within a certain...
24 feet if they're within 25.
Yeah.
So, and it only applies to buildings that are 30 feet or greater in height. So without knowing what is being proposed to be constructed, the step down or set back standards that would generally be applied are unknown at this point. And Ms. Lowe, to your point, we'd have to look at the what you're suggesting under the additional 10 foot of setback. We'd have to examine that.
Okay.
I don't believe the double dipping, because that would be double dipping. It would require then basically, we already have a 15 foot, well, we have a 25 foot rear from the R1 to begin with.
So it
would be 35 feet with the standard 10 foot for greater than 30. You'd be 45 feet. I don't believe that that was what was intended.
Well,
and again, we have never had to deal with that issue up to this point. So I would prefer not to make that as an emphatic statement that that would be what would be required. That may require some additional evaluation.
Understood. Just wanted to point out that there are measures in place to deal with height in this exact situation.
And actually, it's the site. It would be the side in the rear. I believe you are correct in the general standard for 30 from a 35 to 45. It's inclusive of both.
Commissioner Williams.
I'm making a motion as soon as we're done with comments.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify and I appreciate Commissioner Lowe and city staff pointing out that we don't require a plan to rezone. My point is that the reason I would want a plan is because there are potential uses that are permitted under this zoning that I am not sure would make it proper for the location and the surrounding areas. And so it's not adding a requirement to have someone provide us with a plan, but demonstrating to me that the use of it, because there are perceived uses that in my mind could make it inappropriate for the surrounding area. So that's the intention for my comment. And the other thing that I wanted to reiterate, and I should have said it the first time, just to the applicant, is that my comments here relate strictly to what I believe are trying to be equitable to all the parties involved. And as we said the first time you were here, and I reiterate again, your intended purpose behind all of this, as it was articulated in the original meeting, remains in my mind very admirable. And so it's certainly not, my view is certainly not intended to try to inhibit what you're trying to accomplish. I'm trying to balance out the equities of the overall situation for everyone. So I just wanted to set that out there as well.
Any final further comment? Commissioner Lowe, I think we're ready.
Thank you. In the case of 260-2024, move to approve RMF zoning map amendment.
Second.
Approval moved by Commissioner Lowe, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, whenever you are ready.
Commissioner Ortiz?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams? No. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Walters?
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky?
No.
Seven yeses and two noes. The motion carries.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Next, we'll go to public comment. If there are any members of the public here tonight to make comments of a general nature, please come forward now. It's just general comment, Jay. Oh.
I'm sorry. I am going to take my 6 minutes.
That's okay.
Jay Gephardt, civil engineer, civil group, 3401 Broadway Business Park. Mr. Williams, I want to try to address some of your concerns and put yourself from my perspective on some things. So if I was bringing in the Westbury development, I would have a preliminary plat, show the streets, the lot layouts and stuff. That's the kind of plan that can be done and done with assurance because it's approved and it has to come back before you to be revised. Anything anyone brings here and just shows you has no validity, because I've had clients sell the property within a couple weeks of the property, and then the new property owner, he's entitled to those rights, what's been granted in the zoning, and he can do something different. Now, will it be difficult? I don't think so, because he doesn't have to come back before you. So I understand your desire for plans, but the gist of the UDC, I thought, was to have these use-specific standards that address those uses that are problematic within those districts. And so, you know, in the case of RMF, there's quite a few, I don't know how many, talks about, you know, how long you can go with the straight part of the building and all these things. So, I mean, that's the tool that you guys have. And we've run into this on Copperstone last summer. You know, we had a plan district and the commission was asking me, why aren't you doing this as an open MN zoning? And it's because the neighborhood was entrenched in that idea of plan district. They want to see those plans. So it's what I'm trying to say to you basically is that you can't, you know, we get asked all the time, what's the plan? What's that? And plans change and there's no guarantee. I don't care who stands up here. I can't ever stand up here and show you a conceptual drawing and say, that's what's going to be built.
Thank you. I do appreciate you sharing that perspective and it's helpful. To hear from someone who's doing this every day and then bringing this, getting the other side of the dais. Right. So thank you.
I mean, and so I will bring before you a drawing someday and it's conceptual, but I can't guarantee that that's what it's going to, that's the best intention at the time. And that's all that can be done on that. Yeah. Plan districts are a whole different story, but, I thought we were trying to get away from that. So, okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Gephardt?
Thank
you very much, Jay. Are there any further public comments? Seeing none, Mr. Zinner, staff comments?
Yes. So, your next meeting will be November 21st. Begin with a work session, and Mr. Kuntz will be presenting to you in my absence the lot analysis between the inner and the outer rings of Columbia, so inside the stadium loop, and giving you a lot analysis and a breakdown as it's part of our overall small lot integration project. And then on the flip side of that, he'll give you some data as it relates to outside of the stadium loop for contrast purposes. That'll probably occupy the majority of the meeting, given that there was some good data that was actually harvested out of that information. And that data has been the inside data was shared with the H3 consultant as a part of the Central City study. Given that the majority of the area that will be presented had to deal with that and it was broken down very specifically. So just so you all are aware, the H3 Central City study is still ongoing. We are working with the consultant at this point in order to address some issues, and we'll be having that reinitiated here. And at this point, Mr. Teddy and I are not sure when the consultant will be ready. We had a meeting about a week and a half ago. There were still some substantial changes that needed to be made to what was being prepared to be presented for the relaunch of this process. Unfortunately, there's been some significant technical issues as well as some other issues that needed to be addressed. The consultant contract requires working with the Planning Commission, so you will have an opportunity to have a dialogue with the consultant at a point. We just don't know when that will be. It'll probably be after the beginning of the new year. So your comments that have been raised, your concerns that were expressed when Mr. Teddy gave the overview of what was going on after the first set of public meetings, that has all been very, very unemphatically conveyed. And I have provided a significant amount of frustrated commentary as it relates to the lack of acknowledgement of what we are working on for our lot integration project into what is being proposed and potential misrepresentations of what our code currently is capable of producing. So we're working through some significant issues. And so I just want to let you know that this is not a project that we are just not dealing with at this point. We are trying to get it back on a set of tracks that may run it in the right direction, given some of the missteps that were taken early on. To follow up on Mr. Gebhardt's comments, and just to make sure that our newer commissioners are aware of the general position that we as a staff take on plan development plans when we are doing plan district establishments. Historic practice had been that very site-specific development plans would be presented, showing actual building footprints, actual locations on a site, going into great detail. It is what we have lovingly referred to internally within our office from a staff perspective as fictitious because of the number of plan changes that occur. And so with the adoption of the development code in 2017, the desire was to gravitate away from plan districts. However, that did not resolve, of course, what historic practice had been, and that was showing fictitious development just to put a layout on a piece of paper. So those of you that have been here since Copperstone was presented, which is at the corner of Scott Boulevard and Vauder School, that PD plan, which was 15 years old and coming to this commission, was the first of its kind. It didn't show any buildings. It showed 10 lots, and it showed a description of bulk and area requirements or limitations to each of those lots based on its interaction. No building plans. The specific approval of that PD plan through the regulatory process of council stipulated that a site-specific development plan for each of those 10 lots would be required before a building permit would be issued. So there is a two-step process when we do plan development. It's if you don't have a user in tow, you're coming and you're basically describing what my bulk and mass and other aspects, development aspects, will be. When you get your user, such as the Ventures, the swim club that will be constructed on lot 101 of Copperstone, that is when you bring in your site-specific development plan. And the process that we go through here is we have to start at the broad, and then we get to very narrow. We don't start narrow and debate and debate and debate, and then change it 6 months later. It's inefficient. And so we just don't, that's not what we do. So when we bring in plan developments, they won't have buildings shown on them if there isn't a user in tow. And so that's just something to be prepared for when it happens. We steer applicants away from plan districts like we do COVID. We hate getting it, and we don't want it, or the plague. So you won't see many, and when we do have to do them, which 262, the case that we tabled this evening, is a planned district. It is a planned district because of what we have to work with. Infrastructure placement within a development, the inability to be able to, without significant modifications of our code, address the issues that are there. So it's a different type of animal, and what we are attempting to do is we are attempting to streamline the process. As we talk tonight in work session, you know, if there are particular concerns that you may share as a commission that you feel we need to do something with our regulatory standards, the process of addressing those is by requesting that the code be amended. And so, to Mr. Brodsky's point, that in this particular location, potentially a 45-foot tall building may have been overpowering, there may need to be use-specific standards that we add to our neighborhood protections that deal with that issue. But we can't just ad hoc make them up during the review process. And we'll let Mr. Craig do the rest of the research on that to have a final answer. But that is generally from a planner's perspective, when we look at order and predictability, that's how we administer our code. Finally, the one last thing I'd like to talk about before we move into the cases for the next meeting. So the use-specific standards that deal with step down and set back, which are specific to buildings that are over 30 feet. There are the two options, as Ms. Lowe pointed out. You either step down the height of a building 30 feet or greater to 24 feet if you were within 25 feet of an adjoining property that's developed with a single or two-family structure, or you increase the contiguous side and rear setbacks a minimum of 10 feet from the underlying district. What that will result in, if you are going to build a building that is taller than 30 feet, allowed to be up to the maximum of 45 in an RMF district, it results in a 35-foot rear yard setback, and it would result in a 25-foot side yard setback. The dimensional standards in the dimensional standards table that authorize RMF development to go from its standard 35 feet to the maximum 45 specifically reads in note number 4, or 45 feet if two side yards are at least 15 feet in width. So if you apply the neighborhood protection standard, which would result in a 25-foot front yard setback, you automatically are provided the opportunity to do a 45-foot tall building in the RMF district with no additional setback being applied. Wanted to provide that as just a level of clarification this evening. Just so we know, moving forward in these situations, that is how the code reads and how we would apply it in the permitting stage. Again, I've got a talented staff. I've got a talented building department that does exceptional review based on plan reviews. We coordinate our efforts significantly to ensure that we are not allowing the community to be developed in a manner that's inconsistent with the code. I appreciate your opportunity and your willingness to participate to craft that. That's what we rely on you all for. It's your observations and your interactions with the public that we often don't get to see. And you are also the sounding board for things that we bring that may appear to be crazy at times or just giving the farm away too often. You keep us grounded. With that, like I said, you have a meeting on November 21st. Mr. Kuntz will present in the work session for you. Mr. Teddy will be here in my stead since I will be out of town, and you will have a good Thanksgiving meal. I've already arranged that, so come prepared for turkey and stuffing, some green beans, if I recall correctly, and maybe a salad because, you know, we feed you like rabbits at every meeting. You have three projects on your agenda. We have this unconventional RMF straight zone property going to PD down at Legacy Farms. As we had talked about previously, this is a project that unfortunately the original developer, who wanted to do an in common detached housing project, was unsuccessful, and the property has been reacquired by the bank, and they are desiring to be able to market the property now as a more conventional single family subdivision. You have two short-term rental requests, and as I refer to today in work session 1225, it is possible that that will have some significant public commentary. And then you have one that is at 806 Boulder Drive, both of which are, the College Park is actually a owner-occupied short-term rental. and is seeking 210 nights under the CUP. So it's the upper level of that home that actually takes access off of College Park Drive. The owner lives within the lower level of the home. And then Boulder Drive is a non-resident 210-night short-term rental just to the north of the outdoor playing fields south of the stadium at MU. Again, Mr. Tedder will cover both of these for you. Please be gentle. This is your locations, so if you're wanting to know, I know Ms. Lowe knows exactly where College Park is. And she won't have to recuse herself unless she has a pecuniary interest in this property. And then, of course, our Boulder Drive property is there off Carter Lane, and it's in the back of a very interesting environment of multiple single-family homes as well as a lot of rental. Those are your three cases. I can tell you in December, we will be having a guest speaker at your second meeting, the December 19th meeting. There will be a presentation being made by a consultant that our Public Works Department has hired as it relates to our Complete Streets program. So they will come and they will discuss. CMT is the consultant's company name. They will come and they will present to you what the program is, what they have been contracted for to do, as well as take any questions that you may have as it relates to that contract. The December 19th meeting is also your holiday meal. So we will not have any other business. So this will be more of a, we feed you a pretty good spread, as many of you have been around know. And then we will deal with our consultant at 6 p.m. is when the consultant will be asked to speak. They have about a half an hour presentation, and then the remaining half an hour for work session will be more of providing some just the calendar for 2025 and some other just general business items, but nothing for heavy thinking. December 5th, the meeting in between mine that I will be gone for, we will try to come back to starting to discuss some of the outstanding provisions that we have left with the lot integration project. Given some of the things that have occurred since this project began, such as the housing summit and some other elements that have been discussed at the community, there may be a couple of topics that will come up during that discussion, but we are making progress slowly but surely. And what I would like to try to do early in the first quarter of next year is have that project wrapped up, both from a zoning perspective and a subdivision perspective, so we can begin to move that forward as a regulatory initiative to try to relieve the housing availability crunch that we're currently facing. So hopefully we can do that beginning January. Thank you very much for your time, your attention. That's all I have to offer.
Thank you. Are there any commissioner comments this evening? Commissioner Brodsky.
I don't want to derail and go into a long conversation about this tonight, but if you could do some review of that specific language.
Sure.
About the conditions.
The first read does, you know, it may be disfavored, but is it technically prohibited? I'll look into that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's my concern. You know?
And I've been here since April, and we've never done that, but that doesn't mean necessarily that it's something that could be done.
Right. You know, in ordinances, when you're developing ordinance, and to be clear, I do not want to go back to planned unit developments. When I was on the commission from 2006 to 2009 or whatever the years were, I was quoted in the Tribune using less than colorful language about planning process. But there is room, and I think it's wise to have some flexibility with things. For example, the case that we saw tonight, the RMF property sits much higher than the R1 surrounding properties to the south, in which case, you know, maybe there needs to be some adjustment because you can't really think of every single situation when you're doing ordinances. And there's a big difference between saying, hey, let's keep this building under 25 feet, and then the whole process that we used to go through with planned developments. So. I would appreciate a little more in-depth analysis on what exactly we can or cannot do with conditions on approvals.
Commissioner Williams?
Just as a, if we were to go that route, I'm just entertaining what you're saying for a second, and let's say we had a rezoning and it was subject to then a unique restriction, so that then becomes like a deed restriction or something that gets put on the property, or it's, or that's just specific to that zoning. I just, how do you record that?
Well, and that's what gets a little bit wonky here, because you're still rezoning. So to Mr. Brodsky's point,
just ask that, like, can we do this during work session at our next meeting, maybe after legal's had a chance?
Well, let me just finish my thought if I can. It would be part of, it would become part of the ordinance that entitles the property to the new district. Typically, the way that that is tracked then over time, it's been typically tracked through as a planned district because it's special zoning. It's special legislation. It wouldn't, to my knowledge, function as a deed restriction. It runs with the zoning of that land. And that's, I think, where the dilemma comes. Because we wouldn't be looking for that special condition with a straight zone parcel of property.
Any further, Commissioner Lowe?
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Without objection, we stand adjourned.